And good evening. This is your word of mouth news. You're tuned in to CKLN 88.1 FM, broadcasting from Ryerson University in Toronto. It is 6 p.m., and this is your word of mouth news for Friday, October the 22nd, 2010. And my name is Kristen Schwartz.
And I am Susie Alvarez.
On tonight's show, we're going to be joined by Murphy Brown, a CKLN News host on the Tuesday Word of Mouth. She's running for Toronto District School Board Trustee in Ward 14. That's in Parkdale High Park.
And next, we will welcome to the studio John Sharkey of the Toronto Bolivia Solidarity. He'll be talking about the Oliver Stone film South of the Border, which screens next week at the Bloor Cinema. It is being brought to Toronto by Latin American Solidarity Network and Toronto Bolivia Solidarity. Then at 6:30, we turn the mic over to Anti-Psychiatry Radio with Don Weitz.
But first we go to the headlines for tonight, and this is thanks to Democracy Now!, Rabble, and the Toronto Media Co-op. In the United States, new doubts are being raised over reports that the Obama administration is backing peace talks between the Afghan government and the Taliban. U.S. officials have claimed that they've allowed senior Taliban leaders to enter Afghanistan for meetings with Afghan leaders, with some even flying aboard a NATO aircraft. But a newspaper reports that several U.S. officials and experts see the claims as being part of an information strategy to sow division within the Taliban, and that no significant talks are underway. One U.S. official said, "This is a psychological operation, plain and simple."
And the Obama administration is also preparing to unveil today a new $2 billion aid deal for the Pakistani military. According to the Associated Press, the money will be provided under a program for the purchase of U.S.-made weaponry. The New York Times, meanwhile, is reporting the U.S. will cut aid and training to around a half dozen Pakistani army units accused of killing unarmed civilians and prisoners during recent offensives against the Taliban in the Swat Valley of South Waziristan. The aid will be withheld under the Leahy Law, which prohibits military assistance to units suspected of committing atrocities.
And a humanitarian aid convoy has arrived in the Gaza Strip after departing from the United Kingdom over a month ago. On Thursday, over 300 activists with the group Viva Palestina crossed into Gaza through the Rafah border crossing with Egypt. The group includes several dozen people who took part in the Gaza-bound aid flotilla, which was attacked by Israeli forces on May 31st.
And a wrongful death case brought by the family of the slain American peace activist Rachel Corrie, meanwhile, has resumed in Israel. Corrie was crushed to death by an Israeli army bulldozer in Gaza 7 years ago as she stood in front of a Palestinian home to help prevent its demolition. An internal Israeli army investigation exonerated the soldiers involved. Yesterday, the driver of the bulldozer testified in court for the first time, but spoke from behind a partition to protect his identity. Appearing on CNN International, Rachel Corrie's mother, Cindy Corrie, criticized the secretive proceedings. In his testimony, the driver said he couldn't remember several basic details of Rachel Corrie's killing, including the time of day when it occurred.
And Haiti is confronting what is being called the country's biggest medical emergency since the January earthquake, with a suspected outbreak of cholera. Nearly 140 people have died and over 1,500 have fallen ill in the central region of Lower Artibonite. Haitian president candidate Charles Henry Baker appealed for aid after visiting the area.
And now we go to local news. Today, victims of gun violence and public safety experts expressed their shock at comments by mayoralty candidate Rob Ford on gun control. In a mayoral candidate debate, Ford indicated that he will take his lead on gun control from Prime Minister Stephen Harper and the federal conservatives. Elaine Lumley, whose son Aiden was shot and killed, expressed disbelief. In recent months, police, health and safety experts, women's organizations, unions and victims of gun violence have fought hard to keep the registry. But Prime Minister Stephen Harper has reiterated, quote, "The party I lead will not rest until the day the registry is abolished," unquote. Depending on the election results, he may have to help He may have the help of a mayor of Canada's largest city in dismantling gun control. According to the statement released today, Ford's stance on gun control will be an incredible reversal of the city's long support for gun control.
In other election news, to help voters with sight, hearing, and mobility issues, Elections Toronto will be providing special voter assist terminals, or VATs, on Election Day. The terminals have enhanced audio, touchscreen, braille, foot pedal, and other functions, and will be available at one location per ward. If you're planning to vote on October 25th and would like to use a voter assist terminal or know someone who would, call Toronto Election Services at 416-338-1111 and press 6 for more information.
And according to a report filed by Tim Groats for the Toronto Media Co-op, many Toronto residents are not eligible to vote, and many who are have not yet been registered. Only 61% of Torontonians are registered, and in one ward, less than 50% of the population are registered voters. Many Torontonians are not able to vote because of the requirement that you must be a Canadian citizen. In the mayoral race, Smitherman and Pantalone have supported the idea of extending the franchise to non-citizens, and Ford has said he's open to discussing the idea. To be eligible to vote, you must also be over 18 years of age, including a large portion of the population from voting. Not all registered voters live in the city. Anyone who owns property in the city or who is married to someone who does is eligible to vote. So eligible electors who are not yet registered can still register on voting days, October 25th, if they have sufficient ID. For more information, you should visit www.toronto.ca/elections/voters. And now on the subject of the upcoming election, we have here joining us in the studio Murphy Brown, who is a former programmer at CKLN, and she is currently running for Toronto District School Board Trustee in Ward 14, Parkdale High Park. Hello, Murphy, and welcome to the studio.
Hello, Susie. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity, but it's Toronto Centre Rosedale.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks for correcting that.
Okay.
Yes, that's a very important piece of information.
Which includes City Wards 27 and 28.
Right.
That's the area. Every trustee, TDSB trustee candidate is covering two city wards. That's how it works.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Thanks for that. So can you also tell us what is the role of the school board trustee and why are you the best candidate for trustee in Ward 14?
The school board trustee, one of the most important roles of the school board trustee is an advocate for students and parents at the Toronto District School Board. So trustees are supposed to advocate for what is best for the students in their ward. And one of the most important ways to do that is for trustees to be involved with the school council and to have a ward council, which Ward 14 does not have. There is no ward council in Ward 14. And I am the best candidate for this position because I was one of the representatives from a school in Ward 14 in a functioning ward council a few years ago. So I have the experience, more than 20 years experience as an advocate, as an activist parent, as a leader in the education system, both as an employee and as a parent, as an activist.
And what are some of the issues you have heard from parents and community members while you have been campaigning during this past weeks?
Parents are concerned about safety. The Toronto District School Board has allowed some of the buildings to deteriorate at a bit of an alarming rate. For instance, the province has allowed, they've deferred maintenance in some of the school buildings, which has caused the buildings to deteriorate. And that, of course, leads to safety issues because we can't have things falling on children, mold, and that kind of thing happening in classrooms. And that is one of the biggest problems that parents are concerned about.
Can you talk to us a little bit about your platform? What is it that you're standing for in this election?
My platform is, I as a trustee candidate, I stand for an education system that develops a systemic approach to inclusive and equity-oriented education, an education system that does not tolerate any incidents of racist or homophobic behavior and is vigilant in addressing and following up on these incidents on the part of any of its students, staff, or officials. And an education system that will recognize and acknowledge that it has a role to play in overcoming the social inequalities that affect the community it serves. I also stand for a curriculum that is inclusive of the heritage of the school population, including recognition and respect for the unique history of Canada's First Peoples and the history of immigration from all parts of the world that has enriched the cultural diversity of this country and, of course, the ward, which Ward 14 is very, very diverse. So that is part of my platform.
And I think you're keeping up a pretty good informative blog. So I would like you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and how they can keep up with you during this campaign and how they can support you.
Well, I am looking for people to support me by volunteering their time to hand out flyers, by taking my lawn signs to put on their lawns, on their front yard, on their fence, their businesses, in the window of their businesses, so that I can get the word out there that I am running for trustee, that I am the best candidate in Ward 14. I'm also looking for financial donations. But if you don't have money, that's okay. You can still email me at votemurphybrown@gmail.com to let me know how you can support my campaign. So I need volunteers to hand out my literature and to take my lawn signs. And you can follow my blog at www.electmurphybrownward14.blogspot.com. And Brown with an E on the end, B-R-O-W-N-E. So Elect Murphy Brown, M-U-R-P-H-Y-B-R-O-W-N-E, one word. Elect Murphy Brown, Ward, W-A-R-D, Ward 1414.blogspot.com. That's my blog.
Well, thank you, Murphy, for joining us today. And we want to encourage everyone in Ward 14 to go out there, to also get in touch with Murphy, to volunteer, and to show your support during this upcoming elections.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to go to a music break and come back with John Sharkey of Toronto Bolivia Solidarity. This is Word of Mouth News on CKLN. Keep it locked.
Thanks. We'll be right back.
I've dealt with foreign leaders. And I've dealt with iconic characters, and let's say I favor the underdog. So here is a man who's been picked on endlessly for years. And in that vein, I went there, and I wanted to make it about the American media because we seek out enemies. America has got a certain paranoia since World War II that's gotten worse and worse and worse. And we find leaders in Iran, in Vietnam, and in Iraq. We created Saddam Hussein, and here we go in Venezuela. In 2002, we were much. If we had succeeded in Iraq, I do believe that Mr. Chavez would have been under even more pressure. I would go further and just say that this goes to the heart of American paranoia. This is not just about Latin America. It's about why we create enemies, in, whether it's Hussein or Vietnamese enemies in North Vietnam or Russia. Why do we go to these extremes, push, exaggerate, demonize? Why?
And that is Oliver Stone in the film South of the Border. You're listening to Word of Mouth News on CKLN 88.1 FM. And as has been discussed very often on this program, there are massive social changes sweeping across South and Central America, with left-wing governments being elected in 10 countries. Under the leadership of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, Evo Morales in Brazil, Fernando Lugo in Paraguay, Lula in Brazil, and many, many more, poverty, hunger, and illiteracy are literally going down across the continent, while political participation is growing like never before. And Toronto moviegoers have a chance to learn more about those leaders and their impact this coming Wednesday. With the screening of Oliver Stone's film South of the Border. You heard a clip of that just a minute ago. The film premiered last year at the Venice Film Festival, and it's going to be shown at the Bloor on Wednesday. John Sharkey of the group Toronto Bolivia Solidarity, which is co-presenting the screening that evening, is with us tonight to talk about it. Welcome, John, to CKLN.
Thank you, Kirsten. Thank you very much.
So why should we see this film?
Well, it's an Oliver Stone film. We all know Oliver Stone's probably one of the most progressive and best American film directors. So he took a tour of South America and is profiling, as you were mentioning in your introduction, the fascinating political movements that have been developing in South America, particularly in the last 10 years.
Now, one theme is that I understand from the film is that these are stories that are not told in the mainstream media in North America, and in fact that leaders are vilified and depicted as enemies. And again, that was in the clip that we just played. Can you tell us, how does he illustrate that in the film?
He does that in a very interesting way. He cuts back and forth between the way that Chavez is portrayed in the corporate media in the States. And so you say that the craziest things coming from, mainstream announcers about how he is a dictator this and a dictator that. And then you cut back to what is going on in Venezuela, and you see him interacting, with the people down there, and you get interviews of various people who are really describing what's going on. There's even one clip where during the attempted coup against him, he shows how the American media actually manipulated the imagery to make it appear that Chavez supporters were actually instigating the violence, some of the violence that went on. And in fact, it was the exact opposite. So you have you go back and forth between the way the American media presents the political situation there and the way it really happens, or at least the version of the way it really happens down there. This is totally contradictory to the way it's portrayed.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that the focus of the movie is interviews with several Latin American presidents and leaders with Oliver Stone. After seeing those interviews, do you feel like you know the people better? Like what do you get out of those interviews?
That is what you can really tell when you watch the movie, is that it's designed for a North American audience, okay, who's not familiar with what's going on down there. So you have these profiles of the political leadership that's emerged out of the political movements that have been going on down there. So he kind of personalizes it in that way amongst the leaders, among the leadership. But you do get a sense that these people are emerging out of a political movement that have been developing down there for, been going on for a long, long time down there, but mm-hmm. have particularly taken a very positive expression in the last 10 or 15 years.
Mm-hmm. How much does he deal with the history, the most relevant or the most immediate history being like the 1980s and the 1990s, mm-hmm. the times of dictatorships and coups propagated by the United States and its allies, and then the neoliberal period mm-hmm. that followed and the impoverishment of people that was forced on the continent by the U.S. How does he deal with that, or is that information that people have to find elsewhere?
Yeah, that's a good question. There is a bit of that historic background when he deals with Venezuela and Hugo Chavez. So you do get the sense of the Caracas. I think I'm probably mispronouncing that. But there was a massive demonstration in the late 80s, 90s, where there were thousands of people killed in the streets of Venezuela and Caracas, where people were demonstrating about massive increases to public services and even bread. And for the cost increase, and mm-hmm. so that was a really wake up call to the continent in many ways, particularly in Venezuela, mm-hmm. And one can say that it led directly to the election of Hugo Chavez a few years later.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, we only have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure that you get to talk about the work that you're doing in Toronto, Bolivia Solidarity as well. Toronto, Bolivia Solidarity is one of the groups co-presenting the screening with the Latin American Solidarity Network. Can you tell us about what you hope to achieve by bringing this film, and how does showing a film like this support your work, and what do you do?
Okay. The Toronto Bolivia Solidarity Group is one of the groups that make up the Latin American and now Caribbean Solidarity Network in the city. And it's made up of, network is made up of probably 12 to 14 different solidarity networks. We do various works around what's going on in South America. Bolivia in particular is interested in the climate change issue, because Bolivia initiated a climate change conference in Cochabamba in mid-April, which was in reaction to the failed Copenhagen reports that went on in December, the UN negotiations there. And they put on a counter conference there that really was the expression of the people down there. Mm-hmm. And they are promoting that within the UN. Okay. So Toronto Bolivia Solidarity is very much behind that movement. We are promoting an international referendum that came out of the Cochabamba conference, and various activities around around the environmental stuff.
So what's the question in the referendum?
Underdeveloped because there was so much information that came out of the Cochabamba, distilling it into an understandable question is going to be quite the challenge for sure.
But basically it's a opportunity for people, you're hoping that you can create an opportunity for people to have a voice on
Yes.
on the issues that impact the climate.
Right. There is a call from Venezuela, from Bolivia, to organize similar conferences around the world. And we are holding a teach-in here on November the 13th. It's going to be held at here in the city. You'll be hearing about that. And it's going to be a day-long teach-in on the climate change issue as it was coming out of the Cochabamba conference and their activities. So they are really promoting a grassroots engagement with the climate change issue, and we're part of that here in the city.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming down tonight to the station to talk about the film and about your organization. So again, South of the Border by Oliver Stone with Tarek Ali, and who's the other writer?
Mark Weisbrot, right. Out of New York. Yeah.
That is going to be screening at the Bloor Cinema this coming Wednesday, October the 27th at 7 in the evening. And
we're on Facebook.
Okay. So look for Toronto Bolivia Solidarity on Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can even reserve tickets.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And we'll hope to see some of our listeners out there on Wednesday.
Great.
Thank you, John Sharkey, and thank you, Susie, for the music. I think we've got another track, and then we'll be going to Don White's and Anti-Psychiatry Radio. This is CKLN 88.1 FM.
Nací un día de junio del año 77, planeta Mercurio y el año de la serpiente. Signo patente tatuado y en mi frente que en el vientre de mi madre marcaba el paso siguiente. Nacer llorar sin anestesia en la camilla, mi padre solo dijo es Ana María. Sí sería el primer llanto que me probaría, que mandó las heridas y dándome la batería. Solía ser entonces como un libro abierto, pero leí la letra pequeña del texto, como un arquitecto construyendo cada efecto. Correcto, incorrecto, se aprende todo al respecto. Saber que algunas personas quieren el daño, subir peldaño toma tiempo, toma año. Con mi peluche mirando lo cotidiano, dibujos transformaban el invierno en gran verano. Papá me regaló bajo mi insistencia un juego que trataba de compartir la existencia. Pero en el patio hicieron la competencia, fue cuando sentí mi primera impotencia. 1970, 1970, 1970, 1977. No me diga no, dime lo que siento. Todo lo que cambia lo hará diferente en el año que nace la serpiente. 1977. No me diga no, que no lo presiento. Todo lo que cambia lo hará diferente en el año que nace la serpiente. Fue una etapa a avisar, cuerpo es batería y la cabeza a quitar. La orquesta narra una tonada quebrada para la mirada de una niña que solo talla espada. Hormona disparada, sobrepobladas, información que cambian temporadas, caminas encrucijada. Cada cual en su morada preparaba la carnada, la sagrada diablada de mirada encabronada. Mi fila en la verdad nunca buscó su silla, mi búsqueda fue mero proceso de pura fila. Pupila de poeta que marcó nuestra saliva, en la cordillera que miraba la salida. La parada militar de paso monótono, colores policromos, los uniformes de poco tono. De tono mi cuestionamiento, la voz hizo no, no. Mi primera rima que sonó y me enroló. Mi búsqueda no fue para mi cosa de escenario, fue algo necesario y que marcaba ya mi fallo. Así que tú hablas más de lo necesario. Fue cuando entendí que todos quieren ser corsario. 1970, 1970, 1970.